Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
On Radio Le Mans, brought to you by Audi Ultra, lightweight technology.
All right, we've got 10 and a half. All right, pop pickers, not off. Sorry, I went DJ there. He said I've been talking on national radio back in the UK, and all of a sudden I've dropped back into the 1970s. At 10 and a half hours to go, and it is Earl Bamber that leads, having completed 219 laps. Ben Trelawney is second. That's the number 19 Porsche, by the way. It's about a minute and 2 seconds behind. So after a couple of three laps where Earl was just playing himself in, really, leaving them outside off stump, etc., he has stemmed the tide and held it at about a minute and 2 seconds. Ben Trelawith, 21.9 last time, 21.3 for Earl Bamber. 19 Porsche from 7 Audi. From 9 Audi, Felipe Albuquerque still in that one. And he's a further 30 seconds back from his teammate. Brendan Hartley is the fourth driver on the lead lap in the 17 Porsche. And then it's Audi number 8 of Luca de Grassi, Porsche number 18, Romain Dumas. And they are respectively on 2.17 and 2.16 laps, with the leader on 2.19. So still tight enough at the top. I mean, even there, you're only talking about them being 6 or 7 minutes behind the leader. Stefan Sarrazin is still in the number 2 Toyota, which is the best of the two Toyotas, which are both still in the race. 215 laps for Stefan Sarrazin in the 2. Kaz Nakajima, a further 2 laps back on his teammate in 8th position. And on 204 laps, Dom Kreheimer is the Rebellion number 13 in 9th position. 10th now is the top P2 car, Matt Howson, behind the wheel of the 47 KCMG Orica Nissan. 199 laps for that car, some 54 seconds ahead of Pierre Thirier. He's doing a pretty decent stint, actually, in the 46 Thirier TDS Orica. Roman Rusinov in the 26 G-Drive Ligier on 190. Well, it'll be 199 when he comes around this time around. That's the top three in P2. But there's really, although there's a couple of laps between first and fifth and sixth position in P2, that it really isn't that strung out in P2. And anybody who has a problem at the sharp end of the field, it's not like they've got hours to get that one put right, and the old fast but fragile days of P2 are certainly behind us. In GTE Pro, the Aston Martin number 99 continues to lead. 188 laps completed for Richie Stanaway and his team. Tommy Milner is a couple of minutes behind. Is a minute and 5 seconds behind in the Chevrolet Corvette, the 64 car. And meantime, the 51 Ferrari of Jimmy Bruni is in third position, a couple of minutes further back from second. In AM, Matthias Lauda and, well, it was Viktor Scheitar, now Alexei Bazov is in the 72 car. They're separated by about 56 seconds, but they are battling it out again, just on slightly different cycles of pit stops, with Bill Swedler just getting into the 62 Ferrari that is in third position. No further retirements posted since the last time we mentioned it, and Michael Krum has got back out onto the circuit in the Nissan number 22 after Jan Mardenborough brought that car in with a bit of damage earlier on. That's the hourly update, and there's 10 hours and 23 minutes still to go.
The hourly update on Radio Le Mans with Audi.
Well, just going through that just reminds me how close things still are, Grim.
They are. A bit of a moment there for Felipe Albuquerque in the Ford chicane. The GMW Ferrari looking to avoid a slightly errant Ibanez Racing Orica. And Felipe making contact with the left rear of the 66 car. Looks like all three cars, though, have continued otherwise unfettered. But Albuquerque pits now.
But in any case, he was due to come in, so this is not a non-routine pit stop. This is a pit stop that he would have made anyway. Following in, Lucas Degrassi, who was coming in as well on that previous lap for a fuel-only pit stop. This should be Albuquerque also having fuel-only added to the Audi number 9. Having just taken the car over at the previous stop from Marco Bonanomi.
Quick mention for the Radio Le Mans campsite at Porsche Curves. Still Porsche Curves, even. Sam Pierce reporting there's still around about 10 or 20 people there watching from the bank. Normally, two or three at this stage. So the race is captivating the audience here at the track. And we asked you about Haas to F1 or Ford to the World Championship and to Le Mans. Very interesting coming out. Adrian Michael Rees says, ask the question again at 3 p.m. when the people in the F1 bubble might be awake. Yes, very good. Ford at Le Mans, foray into a growing series, not a faltering one with technological and historical relevance, says Adam Green to at RSL underscore studio. Trevor Austin, hello Trevor. Next year, the Haas story, if Haas goes the way of HRT, they'll disappear fast in the press, in his opinion. The general public knows who Ford are, and with respect, not too many people know who Haas are. GTE have more recognisable cars than F1, says Alfred Wallace. I'll give you some more in a few moments' time after we've been down to the Nismo pit lane, where we're going to say good morning to Joe Bradley.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, just getting back in and just finding out what the car feels like. Just bring myself up to date and with the GTE Pro class. I can see that the works Porsche of Jörg Bergmeister is fourth in class. Jörg, I can see you've just handed the car over to your teammate Richard Leeds.
Richard is in the car now, just got out. Fortunately, we had a problem just when I got in. Had to change the damper. First stint okay, second stint I just got caught out in traffic. I think the entire stint I had one clear lap, so it was a little frustrating, but no problems on the car, so we keep pushing.
Did the damper just feel on you? Could you feel it from the driving seat?
I wasn't in the car when it happened. It was Michael, so I just hopped in when he came in the pits.
I take it at this stage of the race, you keep to your program and you push.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we can do, right?
Yeah, I suppose that's what you get paid for. Give us a bit of insight, Jörg. What do you do now? It's the middle of the night.
Hopefully get some sleep. Take a shower real quick and then lay down and get a couple of hours of sleep.
Yeah. Thanks for talking to us. Jörg Bergmeister standing on the pit wall, having just spoken to his engineer. Absolutely soaking wet from the sweat of driving that GT car and that GTE car, and swiftly needing to get back inside because you may not know this, mate, but it's quite chilly out here now.
On the spot and in the heart of the action, the Nismo Pit Lane team. Nismo. Eat. Sleep. Race. Repeat.
Air temperature is 17 degrees Celsius, which is about 68 degrees Fahrenheit. 20.7, it's about 22 on the track, so that's 44, 46, 76 Fahrenheit. On the track. This final one from Miami Phil. Hello Miami. Hello Phil. Who has tweeted to at RSL Studio. The Ford story is bigger because they will have a shot to run with the leaders and win a world championship. Haas F1, at least at the start, will be fighting Manor Marussia at the back of the grid.
If they're lucky. If they're lucky, we don't know.
It's a Ferrari sub team.
If they're
lucky. Let's not forget that Haas is going to be the Ferrari version of Toro Rosso, effectively. So they will get some good kit. But that's an interesting insight from the listener.
No, I agree. I'm not going to get into it because I just get cross, to be honest with you. I think there's very much too much hype about efforts that frankly have not yet deserved it. and at least in the case of Ford, they've got hugely quality people behind it. You can guarantee that car is going to hit the track and be competitive. Look, this is, as far as I'm concerned, it's all about this. Formula One is an established audience, a very large global established audience, which it's losing. Sports car racing has got a very much smaller audience, but is gaining. Mm. Now, are those two lines going to intersect anytime soon? No, they're not. But actually, this is about a growth area of the sport that is capturing the public's imagination, and Ford have seen that, and they're investing their dollar in exporting that. Great, great, great news.
Your thoughts at RSL underscore studio, Sirius 93, XM 201, RadioLeMans.com, and around the circuit on 91.2 FM. It's Mobile One, Radio Le Mans for 2015. And Paul Truswell has in his hand a piece of paper.
It doesn't offer any peace, though, I'm afraid. Alex Kapadia, number 67 in the Porsche, just had a moment at Indianapolis. He's managed to get the car going again, has continued on his way. We'll see what the lap time was when he comes round, but he certainly have lost, I reckon, 15 or 20 seconds out there in the car, which is currently in 40th place overall, 11th in the GTE AM class.
And a significant warning flag for Roman Rusinov, who's clearly been off the track. He's been given a warning flag for an unsafe return to the circuit. Yeah. And this is third place. And in fact, he's just come into the pit lane now. He's third place in P2 at the moment. Being chased down by the Murphy Orica.
Did he not have his pass scanned as he came in through the gate, do you think?
Ooh, now there.
Ooh, catchy.
Paul Truswell having... are you into the soup now?
The soup didn't arrive, but coffee is going down.
All right, okay. I can tell that I saw the flask come out earlier on. Richie Stanaway, 355.6, to continue to just pull out a tiny bit on Tommy Milner. This is the Pro
Not
GT
a tiny
class.
Bit, John. Not a tiny bit. He's beginning now to really make inroads into the Corvette. That, remember, when the...
he's ahead of the Corvette. He's pulling away from the Corvette. Yeah,
but what I thought I meant, but realised I'm too tired to actually for the power of constructive thought at the moment, is that when those two cars came out from and the pit stops evened out, that gap was down to about half a second. It's now, am I right, it's about 30 seconds, Paul?
Between 64 and...
99 and 64.
Yeah, I need this screen for that, don't I? It is 22 seconds.
Well, so that, I think, for the most part, has been done courtesy of Richie Stanaway actually hauling. He's down to a 355.6 to a 359.6 for the Corvette driver last time around, so 4 seconds right there.
Off has spun the... the Rusinov issue was at Indianapolis. He spun off to driver's right, having come down the tight line on the inside, which doesn't work. We've seen this happen a couple of times. And then I think what's going to happen is he'll fire the car up, spin it back onto the track and spray gravel everywhere.
Right, that's what they mean by the unsafe release.
Unsafe return,
so return,
yeah.
Rather.
Fascinated by what's coming in on RSL, at RSL underscore studio. Carol Brink says, I'm not sure if Ford marketing the new sports car racing in the USA will happen. It would take dollars away from the F-150 marketing budget, that being a truck budget. And then Adam Green says, actually, they ran a commercial and an info session during the 8 to 9 Le Mans coverage on the Fox Channel tonight.
So Bill Ford actually name-checked the F-150 at the launch yesterday and talking about the same technology, weight-saving, being used in the Ford GT as was used in the Ford F-150. So they see it's one of the same marketing budgets, as far as they can see.
Back to the GT situation, I possibly misled you because we've got a pit stop inconsistency. Because we, in the sense,
have we now?
In the sense that Richie Stanaway is due in for a pit stop, not at the end of this lap that he's on now, but the next one. Whereas the Corvette had a pit stop 5 laps ago. So whilst they're on the same number of pit stops, then they are comparable. But just at the moment, we've got the situation where the number 99 Stanaway car has had 13 stops. They actually both had 13 stops, but one's had an extra stop for something else. John.
Hello to Andrew Hayes and to Ryan C, both of whom have tweeted in to at RSL underscore studio. Andrew Hayes says, really like how it can go to the store for a late night snack and not miss anything. He's tuned in on his satellite radio in the States. And Ryan C says, agreed, XM was why I suggested to the wife that we take her car to dinner tonight. You're a brave man, Ryan. Well done. And thanks for tuning in on XM 201 or Sirius 93.
Important message, actually, for the listeners out there. Can you please stop mentioning bacon in tweets? Please.
For love of God. It's too early yet.
It's too much.
We're not in the window for bacon yet. It's only 5 o'clock in the morning here. Let's head down to... What am I saying? There's a 24-hour window for bacon, isn't there? Joe Bradley has joined in the... into the Nismo pit lane team. Paul jealously guarding everything that he has over there on his side of the of the booth at the moment. Joe, what have you got for us? You're down at Porsche.
Yes, a stops. Number 19 significantly came in and out as quickly as I can see it. Let me just step out of whatever that static's coming from. The number 19 Porsche in and out just for fuel, very, very swift. It remains maybe 15, 16 seconds on the pit apron, and then it's back away. And Thrapston's second fastest driver's just been in with his Ferrari 55, Matt Griffin that is, and again just fuel for the 55 Ferrari. So that car trying to make up time in the GTE AM class.
In fairness, Joe, he is Thrapston's finest Ferrari driver.
Yeah, but not Thrapston's fastest, because that's Sam, who has the chippy on the corner, isn't it? He's Thrapston's fast quickest driver.
And in fact, Matt Griffin had just put that car's fastest lap in just before he came, and he's back up in the fifth position. However, drama down at Aston Martin on Mildenhall.
Yeah, it's not too much of a drama, John. It looks routine. They're basically pushing the car into the garage and they're doing a brake disc change, but it all looks fairly routine. Richard Stanaway's out of the car and Fernando Reiss is in the car ready to go as soon as those brake discs are changed.
This is the leader, however, and they will lose the lead as Tommy Milner has gone through in the 64 Chevrolet Corvette. Note this one down then, that on lap 192... the 99 car is getting a full brake change. Discs, pads, front and rear. Rotors, if you will, for those of you on the other side of the Atlantic. Oh my goodness, that is very, very quick indeed. Up the pit lane a little bit at Rebellion. The number 12 car is about to get a new nose. And the number 13 car may well be almost ready to rejoin after a slightly longer stop for Dom Kreihammer. Joe Bradley... I've got that the wrong way around, Joe, haven't I?
I would have lead if I hadn't just seen the car come into pit lane, being and taken into its garage. It's the number 13 car that's backwards into the garage, and nothing much being done on the car actually. that's because they can't get the engine.
Can't get the engine started.
They can't get the engine cover off, is what I meant to say there. They have got it off now, eventually. It took a bit of time, bit of shoving and banging there to get it off, and they're taking the front off as well. So extensive work.
We'll leave Joe to find out what's going on there. Meantime, the brake change for the Aston Martin. Owen Mildenhall has been watching some very speedy work by the Aston Martin racing mechanics. Owen?
Yep, amazing job. They're only the front of this, in fact, not the rear, it's just the fronts. And then the car was back out without any delay. I'm just waiting for Richie Stanaway, so hopefully I'm going to try and grab a quick chat with Richie once he gets a quick drink and talks to his engineer.
Meantime, their teammate, the number 96 car, has just had a very lurid spin indeed. Who was aboard that?
Stuart Hall.
At the time, Stewie Hall. And the scary thing was that as the engine stalled, all the lights went out and he was sideways across the track.
2 minutes.
Very, very, very scary indeed.
Just quick, 2 minutes, 18 seconds in the pits for the 99 Aston Martin. That's to get it all the way down the pit lane and change the front discs.
10 to the hour. So let's have a look at that GTE field then. Tommy Milner now back at the head of it. And by about a minute now over Fernando Reis, who has rejoined in the 99 Aston, as reported by Owen Mildenhall. And oh, there's been a coming together, and that's another Aston Martin, and that's the Tyrrea car, isn't it? That is the car in second place for Tristan Garmendy, and that is the first chicane, and both of them comprehensively missing their braking points, and the Aston coming into contact with the rear end of the 46. This will bring out a yellow flag and possibly more. Now, which Aston that was, I don't know. I'm wondering if that was Fernando Reis on his outlap with new front brakes and not having bedded them in quite. But the Aston has continued through the gravel trap with not too much visible damage. The bollards have been sent scattering. There were four bollards there earlier on at the apex.
It's about right on the circuit, looking at where Aston Martin's could possibly be for to be mad at Fernando Reis, but that's still speculation.
Long pedal for Fernando, perhaps, after the brake disc change. And, oh, it was a very much harder hit than I had anticipated. And quite clearly, the Aston, it was Fernando Reis.
It's two green lights on the side of the car, and it was clearly the red and yellow Hanergy Energy car.
And he had no retardation at all. He knew it pretty early on in the piece as he was coming down in the braking area, tried to go around the Tyrrea car of Tristan Garmendy. Feel for Tristan there. It wasn't really his fault. He was turning into the right-handed part and just no slowing down whatsoever. The Tyrrea guys, hands on hips and arms crossed in their pit lane, and that is the second place P2 car. We said earlier on, didn't we, just how tight it all was in P2, and the cat has been thrown in amongst the pigeons, and this is exactly what Murphy, well, weren't hoping for, but they are lurking in that position number four. Pippa Durrani has just done the fastest lap in the 28 Ligier, 3:39.8. So Matt Howson leads P2. Tristan Garmendy is stranded at the first chicane on the Lindwater-Nadier. So Roman Rusinov will go through now and take second place. Nathaniel Berton in the Murphy will be the next car through and will take third position. Simon Dolan will go up into fourth, and the story of a recovery drive, just like last year, for the 38 Jota car continues, and the drama continues as into the pit lane comes Stuart Hall. Aston's all of a sudden having problems. This was the first Aston spinner, Stewie Hall, with a lurid spin, and has got the car back to the pit lane. Now, has Fernando Reis been able to get his car, pump the brakes and get it on and continue? He did a 6:16 last lap around.
What I was going to say before all that happened was that pretty remarkably at the end of that stint, what we saw was Richie Stanaway had extended that lead to 45 seconds before pitting. And I'm afraid that's probably been undone, as the 96 car is being backed into the garage now. Has been undone. He's now a minute behind Fernando Reis, now bought the 99 car, of course, a minute behind Tommy Milner.
And the guys are going to work on the 96 car. This has already had quite a bit of work done after accident damage earlier on. I think Stewie will be reporting an issue on the gearbox. It looked like it locked up on him and pitched him into the spin. And indeed, they are looking around the back of the car at the moment. But the gap now is over a minute between Tommy Milner and Fernando Reis. Let me just finish the rundown in the GT category. Jimmy Bruni in the 51 Ferrari lurking menacingly in 23rd position overall. The leading pair are 21st and 22nd in the GT Pro class. And he's about a minute and 35 seconds behind Fernando Reis. In GTM, Alexei Bazov leads for SMP again now. Pedro Lamy, release the Lamy. He has been plugged into the 98 car with Bill Swedler in the 62 Ferrari in third position. Just noting that Marco Sorensen, where's Pat Long? There's Pat Long, he's just doing a double. Comes out of the pits on the second part of his double in the 77. Fourth position for the Dempsey car at the moment, ahead of Ben Keating in the SRT Viper in fifth in Am. Into the pit lane, the best of the Audis, Ben Trelawney, is in and staying in the car by the look of it.
It'll be his triple stint, or the third part of his stint, if he stays out. And remember I told you his average lap time for his first stint was a 3:21.4. The average lap time for his second stint, 3:21.4. Consistency personified. It's actually, if you take
that's what you expect from Ben, though, isn't it?
Take it down to the second place of decimals, you get a difference. 3:21.46 on that one, as opposed to a 3:21.40 on the first one. So 0.06 of a second slower on a slightly used set of tyres.
So he's flagging then?
He is flagging, yes.
Yeah, really, get pulled out. Yeah. If Bradley was the team manager, he'd have him pulled out of that for just losing pace, clearly. That is remarkable. It's almost like pressing a button on the steering wheel and having the car, you know, just do its thing. Clearly, that's not what happens. But the mental acuity to be able to replicate lap after lap, the braking, the turning in, through traffic. Just hit your mark, son. Here's the numbers we want you to do. All right, then. Let's do it.
And these phenomenally long Audi stints, as always, you know, they've always been doing quadruples right since the start. So it's gone Lotterer, Trelawney, and then Fessler, Lotterer, and now we're on Trelawney again. So they've only gone part way through two cycles through the driving lineup.
Let's go down into the pit lane. Owen Mildenhall has an update on the battle at the front of the GTE fields.
Yeah, it's a real high of activity down here in the GT area of the pit lane, John. We've got the Corvette, 64 Corvette, is having new front brake discs fitted. Interesting, the Corvette guy is doing it in the pit lane, whereas Stuart Hall's car has been pushed into the garage, having all four brake discs changed. So lots of activity down here in the GT pit lane. It also looks like the number 99, the 66 Aston is coming in too as well. Sorry, the 99 Aston also coming in. The guys are getting ready in the Hanergy garage.
And a quick lead down to Joe Bradley. Joseph? Not able to get you, Joseph. I'll just quick one. This is a public service announcement for those of you on www.radiolemon.com who are watching the Duke Video Studio Vision. We're about to do another swap over there. And so you'll have to close that window and open another one. Meantime, let's get back down to Owen, because there's even more drama. Fernando Reis did not get away with that contact with Tristan Gomedy. Gomedy has not got back. Reis has, but Owen Mildenhall, part of our Nismo pit lane team, that's not a happy looking Aston.
No, it certainly isn't, John. There's quite a lot of damage to the front left of the car. So the front left wing is missing. Obviously he's lost his front left headlight. There's damage to the wheel arch and the floor is broken at the front. So the guys are changing the diffuser and putting on a new front wing.
Thanks very much to Owen Mildenhall, as the frantic work now continues on that Aston Martin. If you're watching on our Duke Video Studio Vision on RadioLeMans.com, time to just hit a new browser button, and it'll be coming up in a minute or two's time. Nick Damon and Tim Gray working with that. The damage at the front of the Aston. Well, the good news is the chassis rails have survived the extruded aluminium. Front end and the front clip are absolutely straight. That's the good news. The bad news is there's fluid dripping out of the front of that Aston Martin. Drama then, right at the head of the GTE Pro Field. It's now Jimmy Bruni that leads the class for Ferrari and AF Corsa as we come up to 5 o'clock in the morning. You're listening to 91.2 Mobile One Radio Le Mans for 2015.
When we say live from the event, that's exactly what we mean.
Our team of experts are at the track,
pounding the paddock, patrolling the pits. More driver interviews, more insight, more information, more excitement. As it happens, it's live, it's here. RadioLeMans.com. Get closer to motorsport with Mobile One.
Mobile One.
Just after 5 o'clock Central European time. Hello there. This is John Heindorf with Paul Truswell and now Sam Collins from Risk Car Engineering joining us in the Mobile One Broadcast Centre with all kinds of drama playing out at the head of the GTE field. Let me give you a quick summary of what has happened recently. Stuart Hall had a problem with the Aston Martin number 96 and brought that car back into the pit lane. Just as he was doing that, Fernando Reis, or at least Richie Stanaway, excuse me, came into the pits with about a 45 second lead that he'd pulled out on Tommy Milner in the last hour or so. Very routine looking front disc and pad change. Fernando Reis went out on his outlap down towards the hard braking zone at the right, left, right chicane at the first part of the chicanes at the Ligne Droite Nadière. No retardation whatsoever, and contact with the back of Tristan Gomedy in the number 46 Orica, the Tirier by TDS car. Now the TDS car has not made it back, but Fernando Reis has, and his car is undergoing some remedial work to the left front. In the meantime, the 64, the Corvette, came into the pit lane. Jordan Taylor has been installed in that and has gone back out with a new set of discs. Interestingly, that work was done on the pit apron rather than in the garage. The main beneficiary of all of this is EF Corsa and Jimmy Bruni, the world champion. He's gone through now and leads the class by a minute and 7 seconds from Taylor in the Corvette in second. And Fernando Reis, stranded in the pits at the moment, is now looking over his shoulder, metaphorically at least, for Richard Leitz in the number 91 Porsche, the remaining works Porsche. So all action at the front of that field. Let's go down for an update. Owen Mildenhall is watching the Aston Martin work that is going on, that I'm sure they're working as hard as they can, but the drivers will think it's a snail's pace. Owen, what's the situation with that former leader then, the 99 car in the GTE Pro Class?
Well, as you said, John, there was the liquid that was really causing alarm, so they are now taking the front of the car off to change the radiator. Got a new radiator going onto the car, but also they have to take away quite an area of the front of the car to put a new radiator in. They're also replacing the front section of the floor. And I think when that's done, obviously we're going to get two new front wings and the bonnets back on. But it's the radiator that seems to be taking the time at the moment.
Just amazing how this race continues to keep our attention. Sam Collins joins us. Good morning, Sam.
Hello, John. It's relentless out there, isn't it? I thought it would calm down a little bit, but that battle at the front of LMP1 is crazy.
I don't know if you heard what Paul was saying earlier on, but the stint average times are now quicker than the pole sitter was last year on a single lap.
the actual speed doesn't surprise me too much. We had a lot of evolution in these cars. They've come a long way from last year. But it's just the constant... Normally there's a little... The teams, the drivers, everybody gets a little bit of time to sit back and relax a little bit in the night. But this year's not been at all like that. We've just seen the leader of GTE AM loop the car down at the chicane. So we're going to see that battle between Pedro Lamy and the Aston Martin catching right up to the back of the number 72 AF Corsa Ferrari, and that's going to be a really hot battle list next time by the stripe as well.
I'm going to put my hand up here and say that I was wrong, because I didn't think the Porsches would still have the kind of pace that they've got at this stage of the race. I didn't think they'd have it up to 6 or 7 hours.
Well, we haven't seen it in WEC all year, have we? I mean, since Porsche came back into proper endurance racing, they've really failed to do very well in any WEC race, and they've broken down on a frequent occasion. I thought they wouldn't be anywhere near this level without any real major technical hiccups so far.
Well, it's a great time to find the reliability, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, the real astonishing stint was that one by Nick Tandy as night fell, or as the first real night session progressed. And it was not only a good stint from him, it was quicker than any of the other Porsches were going. And by Andre Lotterer's own admission, they had a slight problem with their car as well, which meant it was going slower in the night. And over the course of a quadruple stint from Nick, that was enabled a 1 minute advantage to be built up by the Porsche, which the Audi now, Ben Trelawney, is just beginning to nibble back, and he's got it down to about 54 seconds. But it's going to be a long old haul from now on in. I said a little while ago, the graph's going in the right direction, but he's going to need to keep on going in that direction for the rest of the race, or the whole thing gets thrown into disarray when it starts raining at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, the snatch tractor has lifted the 46 car out of the gravel, and Tristan Gomini has got it going. He's got, what, two-thirds, Sam, of a lap to get that Tirier by TDS Orica back with a very broken rear end. What will be, I think, the defining part of that is how much the rear end is moving around and what's broken there. Not the bodywork, that's all right, but if there's any of the wishbones or anything like that broken, that's going to be a long old drive back.
Well, it's not just the drive back, the distance of it. We saw it at Matsuda when the Nissan went earlier in the race. You know, Matsuda didn't quite get to that point, and I think he realised what came next at the end of that long section after Arnage Indianapolis. He's got to get through the Porsche curves in a car. There's only one line through there, and it's really hairy to go through there with a car that's a bit sick. Yeah,
and you don't want all of a sudden the back end just stepping out when you've got on the throttle and something pops out, and all of a sudden you've got a bit of rear wheel steer that you didn't need.
Exactly, and going across the track there just as somebody else comes around and finds you.
I don't even want to think about that. Earl Bamber is impressing at the head of the field, Sam, and the technology leap that we've been talking about, and I know this interests you, Porsche absolutely at the forefront of that. They've got the smallest engine, but they've now got the biggest energy recovery system on the grid. And the battery pack that they're using was somewhere near 6 megajoules. I think now they're quite happy to say it probably wasn't getting the full 6 in that last year. They've gone up into 8 this year, but without making that battery pack any bigger, but crucially not making it any heavier either.
And this is the technological advancement that the ACO and the FIA wanted to see with the new rules. They wanted to see it in Formula 1, but Formula 1 didn't really manage to achieve it. But here in Le Mans, in the LMP1 class, this technological advancement has gone so fast, but I think it's actually caught the race organisers by surprise, and the rulemakers by surprise. That's why these cars are so much faster.
But what have we always said? Let clever people do what they do best, which is innovate. Give them a nice big sandbox. Don't sort of parcel them up and keep them in a small place. Give them a big sandbox. Give them the tools they need. Give them a shovel and a bucket, and then see what they come up with. And what we're seeing here are some pretty spectacular sandcastles.
I know. I think they're going to have to take away the shovel, unfortunately, for the lap times we've got, because the cars are so fast now that it's going to lead to circuit changes unless they get rid of that shovel.
I hope that's not the case. We've spoken about this before, and it's corner speed that seems to worry the ACO, particularly at the moment. But I think that we have to accept, Sam, don't we, that we've got two separate issues here. Because on the rest of the circuit that make up the FIA WEC, World Endurance Championship, the speed of these cars is spectacular and not really an issue. At Le Mans, it's a different kettle of poisson, and this is in fact a special case. And of course it's the only non-class 1 circuit that these guys race on all year.
That's exactly right. When John says class 1 circuit, circuits are divided up into different categories of safety standards and surface and facility. Class 1 means Formula 1 safety standards, so that's why you see the Nürburgring tracks like that, Fuji Speedway. These are all Formula 1 standard circuits, the best race circuits in the world. Le Mans does not meet those class 1 specifications. Doesn't meet in terms of the barrier, in terms of the circuit design, in terms of barrier positioning. This is the Le Mans specific problem. You see the number 18 car in the pits from 6th position. That's Romain Dumas. I think he's going to stay in the car by the look of it.
Certainly should do.
Nicely handwritten bottle. You think it will be printed on Porsche design, but no, a little marker pen on the water bottle there.
Yeah, very nice to see.
Second stint to him.
And that was 13 laps.
It was 13 laps. Yeah, we haven't quite got to the bottom of why they're only doing 13, but that's still on Nick Damon's list at some point.
Let's go down in the pit lane, and I think that was Owen that was calling me. Owen?
Yes, it was, John. I'm standing. The 46 CRA car has made it back into the pits, and they're doing a rear end change, but I can see from here, peering over everyone's shoulders, a very, very bent rear wishbone, so they're going to need to do a rear suspension change as well, so it could be quite a long stop.
Thank you very much. Could it be, Paul, that the 13 stops for Porsche is because they are on the ragged edge of fuel flow and fuel usage?
Not unless they can't pick up the bottom of the tank. Now, I'll look to Sam here, because there are some clever fluid dynamic things you can do with the bottom of the tank in order to make the fuel flow in more quickly. Now, it may be that as a result of the way that they've designed the tank and the filler in order to try and get the fuel in quickly, even though the rules allow them to use all the fuel in the tank, they just can't pick it all up because of the design of the tank. And so, as I say, the rules say they've got enough fuel in the tank to go 14 laps. So that assumes they can get it all out of the tank. And if they can't get it all out of the tank, then they may be choosing to only do 13. Or it may just be a tactical idea that they've got and say, look, everybody else is doing 13. If we do 13, we're not going to be at any disadvantage, but we get shorter pit stops.
Well, when you talk about the fuel tank in the car, a lot of people think of these metal boxes, and it's actually just it's like a plastic bag in there. You know, it's not quite a carrier bag. It's one of the posh ones you get from Waitrose or something. It's quite a thick plastic bag made of sort of Kevlar and aramid fibres. In the Porsche, it's actually an ATL fuel tank, and those are the same people that made those Super Trick, Super Fly, totally illegal BAR fuel tanks that were used in Formula 1 at Monaco, where they managed to find an extra little bit of space at the bottom of the fuel tank to get through and run a little bit further than they're allowed to on fuel mileage. ATL and the guys who are designing these fuel tanks really understand that fluid dynamics inside the tank. So pretty much all of the fuel that you'd expect to get from the tank is going into that collector. The collector is like an old bean can with some holes drilled in it and with a pipe sucking the fuel out of it. And you should be able to get down to almost pretty much all the fuel that you're going to get out of it. You wouldn't get a litre out of the end of it, I don't think. So you should be drinking every single bit of fuel.
Right. But in that case, they're leaving more in the bottom of the fuel tank for some reason. And all I'm suggesting is, you know when you turn the tap on in your sink really, really hard and you haven't got any water in there first, it all splashes up because it's hitting the bottom of the sink. Same thing happens with fuel when you put it into an empty tank. If you put it in to a little bit of water, it goes in much more smoothly than it does if you put it into a surface. And it may be that they're getting the fuel in more quickly because of the way that tank is, as you say, designed. And that may be what they're doing.
The other issue with that is there's a difference in the forming properties between diesel and petrol. And diesel does not like being pumped quickly. And then it does form up and you don't get it all in.
What you're really talking about is the size of head on a pint of beer.
Yeah.
You pour a pint, if you're like me and you can't really use a beer pump, you end up splashing foam all over the place and everybody in the pub laughs
analogy.
At you.
You've got to, if you tilt the glass and you have the confidence to throw it all the way down the side of the glass and then pull the glass back and just finish off with a little flourish, that's fine.
Unfortunately, you can't tilt a Porsche 919 in the pit stop. They've tried, it just doesn't really work.
Audi have a very clever tilting petrol tank, apparently. Diesel tank.
Oh, that'd be good.
The 66 GMW car, the one that was all aflame earlier on with the fuel spillage, is getting the disc and pad change in its garage at the moment as Earl Bamber continues to lead. His lead was about a minute and 2 seconds. It's come down closer to 50 seconds now as Ben Trelawney continues metronomically to knock in the 321s. This is an awesome stint from Ben Trelawney. Here is that hero stint that we know that the Frenchman can do, that he does without muss or fuss or whinge or moan. He gets in, and when Lena Gade, his engineer, gets on and says, do you fancy doing 5 stints on this set of tyres, Ben? Yeah, fine, it's fine. Just
I don't think Lena says, do you fancy?
No.
Lena will say, you are doing 5 stints.
Can you do 5, you should probably say.
No, she'll just say, you are. And you don't argue with Lena.
No, that's true. Never doubt the Gade. And hello to everybody on the Audi pit wall who I know are having our radio broadcast brought to them. Thanks to the guys down at MRTC who were working hard on the pit lane as well. Thanks for your assistance earlier on this week as well with some of the radio problems that everyone has been having around the pit lane this weekend. So Earl Bamber now 51 seconds ahead, 3:21.41 against a 3:20.4 as Ben Trelawney has fallen out of his metronomic rhythm and gone a bit quicker. Most people, if they fall out of their rhythm, go slower. Ben goes faster. I know that he was almost poached away from Audi and had a couple of offers from other teams, big money offers, and Audi worked very hard to keep him. Possibly the most underrated, and by you know, we mentioned him now, but I think a lot of people don't really recognise his contribution to that car and indeed to the whole team. So,
well, he's got a lot of letters, but it's not a big, he's not a big name, if you like. He's not one of these guys that's got this Formula One background. He's not racing in Formula E or one of the other big shouty series. He's just getting on and doing it, and he's always been like that. He's one of these drivers, he just gets in and does what they're told, and that's exactly what you need in endurance racing.
I find him a very human kind of individual as well, and he's I said earlier on, he brings a French passion to the German efficiency of the team. He had one slow lap at the beginning of this stint, and I suspect it was because of a slow zone, which has kind of messed up the average calculation, because there was certainly some yellow flag, even if it wasn't a slow zone. But it meant that his, not his out lap, but the lap after his out lap was a 3:44. After that, he's kind of really nailed it. But as I say, the average has been rather spoilt by that, partially affected by the slow zone lap. Apart from that, his average has been a 3 minutes 21 dead. So that's
just remarkable, isn't it?
And with Trelliway still with laps to do, he's not leading the race, but significantly, as you mentioned, John, he is hauling in Earl Bamber, who's not driving the 19 Porsche as quickly as Nick Tandy did earlier on.
And then, having said that, Earl Bamber's just done a 3:20.5, clearly tuned to 91.2 FM, and just getting a bit of a wiggle on. Eric Rude just quoting me saying this is an awesome stint from Ben Trelliway, and says quite rightly, how many times have we all said that in the last 5 years? And it's true, and yet he still isn't, as Paul and Sam have rightly said, he's still not seen as one of the superstars. And
the quiet man of Audi.
Yeah, yeah, but he's just a remarkable driver. His ability to do what he's doing now is one of the reasons that car was my pick before the race started.
Do you know what? The reason I didn't pick a Porsche, and the reason I picked a Toyota before the race started, mainly because nobody else had picked a Toyota, but also that I thought the Toyotas would be playing this game, which they clearly are, with metronomic reliability, pumping in pretty much the same laps time and time and time again. But the average lap speed of those Toyotas is about 3-4 seconds too slow, and Paul will be able to tell us exactly how much. And that strategy is failing, because the Toyotas are falling further and further and further back. 227 laps and 224 laps completed, compared to 232 and 231 for the first two.
And the two car hasn't had an issue. The one car did. Anthony Davidson had a bit of contact in the Porsche curves when he got out of kilter with some of the traffic and banged in the front end. There's a vestige of light in the sky now. It's 19 minutes past five in the morning. 52 seconds is the lead at the head as Ben Trelliway does a 22. A little bit of traffic or a slow zone there, perhaps, just to slow the Frenchman down. And Mobile One broadcast centre begins to come back to life, with people coming back into our broadcast area.
Fastest full stint, just to answer Sam's question, fastest full stint by a Toyota, Anthony Davidson in the fifth stint of the race. So early on, in fact, it was Anthony's first non-safety car stint, 3:24.5. And I'd say that, as you say, Sam, 3 seconds really per lap off the kind of lap times that have been done by both Audi and by Porsche. And I think even Pascal Vasselon said 2 seconds a lap. So, in fact, he's even further off the pace than he estimated.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got that reliability that they wanted. It's just not the pace. And that's still quicker, I think, than they were running last year. So it's a little bit of a difficult one for Toyota to know what to do for future, because clearly this car hasn't got the pace that it needs. So they need a bit of a concept change.
Next year's car, and this is something I was going to discuss with you, at this exact juncture, as in comes the 8 Audi. This is the one that's off the lead lap. Just Lucas Degrassi's been doing a long stint in that car. This looks relatively...
He's done two. This is his third.
Yeah, this is looks relatively routine. The screen's being cleaned. No tyre. Well, tyres are there, but not really being brought out. So it's going to be diesel fuel only. Another 54 litres have gone in. And off he potters down the pit lane. Toyota are already developing next year's car.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
And it's going to have a battery pack and not a supercapacitor, and they're going to go into 8 megajoules.
We think they're going to have a different engine.
It's going to have a turbocharger, somebody told me.
Well, I wonder, have they put rather too much effort into that rather than maximising this car? Or has the simply the pace of development from Porsche and to a certain extent Audi, although Audi effectively using the same backbone, certainly the same chassis, engine and gearbox and suspension layout pretty much as they used last year, which proves that actually that wasn't a bad design.
No, the core of the Audi is the same, but it's that development curve. Toyota's just been a bit left behind, and the concept for the car, I think, has been maximised, and there isn't much more that can come, Paul.
Go back to your, again, a couple of seconds after you asked the question. Fastest stint by Toyota last year, full petrol tank stint by Buemi, 3:26.2, and I say that it compares to this year's 3:24.6. So a second and a half of an improvement on a full stint is not too bad for Toyota, but it's just not enough.
And I think that's exactly what happened. I think what this race has now done, and I don't think they were distracted by next year's car, John. I think this race has just reset those objectives really quite hard. And I think they realised just after Spa quite how hard the objective is going to be reset. I don't think the new engine was on the agenda yet. It's been accelerated. What form that takes, I'm not entirely sure they know that for certain. They've got an idea. I know, but I also think they've got options, because I know of a couple of engines that they can look at, John.
Third position car, Felipe Albuquerque, the number 9 Audi, is into the pit lane. The mechanic leaps two-footed onto the front end of the car to vigorously polish the windscreen. The left-hand door comes open. The Progressive Motorsport pressurised drink system is changed. The windscreen wiper is lifted off the screen, cleaned, put back on again. I love the way the mechanics jump on and, God, that was quick, and use the new bits of the aero kit to stand his feet on.
I was going to mention that, John. You've just reminded me to talk about that, because like, those little speed whiskers, right, they're made of really dainty little carbon fibre pieces, and I was looking at them just going, oh, you know, they're just little shrouds.
I like when, speed whiskers, by the way.
Well, when he jumped on it and whacked his feet on it, you know, he sits
both
on front
feet
of the
off the ground at the same time.
Pushing it the wrong way, essentially, they are strong. I mean,
that's a deflection test right there.
That is a strong car at the front there, and that is what's really amazing. They've built some solid front end on that car. We saw that early in the race with the number 8 car when it had that slow zone schmozzle and ended up with the front end being ripped off and, you know, doing more damage to the barrier than it did to itself, driving back to the pits and a few minutes later whacking a new front on. It's just
4 minutes,
stunningly 19 strong car.
Seconds that took to fix it, and it was out, and it was fixed before the barrier was.
Exactly, but the Porsche could be repaired even quicker, we discovered a bit later on, when the black one had a little moment down at Mulsanne Corner, where a lot of people were going off during this race, and they managed to do it on the pit lane in about 30 seconds, which amazed me.
The pace at this time is relentless. The hint of light in the sky giving people a little bit of hope for later on. It's one of these seminal moments at Le Mans. You have them, you set yourself little targets, as we do here in the Mobile One Broadcast Centre. You get the first 3 hours over, get the first shift over, get the second shift over, you get into darkness, get to midnight, and then you're into Sunday. Get to 3 o'clock in the morning, halfway through the race, get to daylight. But of course, at daylight here, being one of the very shortest nights of the year, and there's now certainly a little bit of indigo in the sky, and we're looking the wrong way where we are. Behind us is where the light is coming from. But we're going to still run something like 9 hours, even when the sun has come up. 3 o'clock this afternoon, Central European Time, currently 25 past five in the classes. The P2 battle continues with Matt Howson still leading it, as ever they have been. This is now, we haven't talked about this enough because they're just doing it. I kind of don't want to talk about it, but you have to. This is Straka-esque from a few years ago. Bring it in, tyres, fuel, out. Tyres, fuel, out. The 47 KCMG is bossing this class, and yet he's only a lap up on the field.
But LMP2, you're not supposed to be able to do that. Well, you're supposed to be about 0.3 of a second away from every single car and down to position 20. But for the whole race weekend, for the whole event, that 47 KCMG, Raker 05, has just blown the doors off everybody. So is the actually Tyrrell TDS car, yeah. Unless it until it had that sort of moment. It was looking very much like an Aracer 0512, and the KCMG guys are doing fantastically, Paul.
Yeah,
Time spent in pits, least time spent in pits thus far in P2, is the Murphy Prototypes car, the number 48. That's done 23 minutes and 17 pit stops. The G-Drive car, number 26, has done 19 pit stops and 24 minutes. And the KCMG car has done 19 pit stops and 26 minutes in the pit. So it's done it on pace out on the track rather than being very, very quick in the pits.
You need to recalculate that slightly, Paul, because the Murphy Prototypes car is in the pits as we speak.
And Joe Bradley is down there. Hello, Joe.
Yes, I am indeed. And we've got Sam Bird, a bit of British interest there, just waiting with his seat in hand. The 26 G-Drive Ligier has been brought to the pit road, and the fire marshal almost gets it there, as Roman Rusinov, who's in the car at the moment, is extracted. And he really does need a bit of assistance to get him out of that and across the pod that leads to the cockpit of the car. The fuel's going in at the moment, and Sam Bird can't get in the car right now because something is being done in the cockpit, and I think that's just a drinks bottle being replenished. The mechanic grabs his seat and inserts it, and now Sam slips down into that very tight and small orifice on this car. As you can hear in the background, the tyre change is just coming to. That's the left front we hear there. Now we're going to zip round, and now we go to work on the right front. The car comes off the jack, job done, lights on.
Nicely done, Mr. Bradley.
They're under pressure, these guys, because I think they can smell it. They can smell a good run here in the P2.
The thing that they need to do, gentlemen, is to keep the pressure on. The old days of fast but fragile second tier prototypes are long gone. If you look at the amount of time spent in the pit lane in the last three or four Le Mans 24 hours, probably the last five or six actually, this is a battle of pace. Now, the lack of real variety of engines, yes, we have a few, but most people are using Nissan, so fuel consumption isn't an issue here. You know they're all pretty much using the same mousetrap for that, Sam. So it really is down to the drivers, and ultimately it comes down to the non-pro driver and how good they are in this class.
And Joe's absolutely right. The G-Drive team is under pressure because they can smell it, but what they can actually smell is the slight whiff of Simon Dolan in that Gibson Nissan coming up behind him. That's the last year's winning car. And you know, with Karen Chandhok at the wheel of the 48, he's got Simon Dolan right coming up behind him. And Simon Dolan is the very, very capable gentleman driver, if you like to use that expression, in that Jota Zytek, as I keep calling it, Jota Gibson, coming up behind him. And he is the guy who won last year. And, you know, he's not far off that position to come and get that Ligier. And that Araka of Matt Howson isn't much further ahead.
That's 45 seconds Simon Dolan away at the moment from a podium position. They can't surely do this. I said in the preview program that if the 38, who were my tip for this, I thought Jota had the momentum coming in there, soundly whipped the regular FIA World Endurance Champions runners at Spa, there being an ELMS, a European Le Mans Series. Surely they can't be back at the back of the grid and drive their way through again to another victory.
I think they certainly can, John. I mean, actually, these Gibson Nissans almost never go wrong because they've been around just for so long, since 2007. And that's when the Greaves number 41 car retired much earlier in this race. It was extraordinarily unusual to see a mechanical failure on one of those cars.
Let's go down to Joe Bradley, who is in the G-Dive pit. Joe?
Yeah, I'm just going to give this a bit of a test while I'm with you at the moment.
That'll do.
I'm going to have to get Roman Rusinov and lead him to the front of the garage.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll give you a shout when I'm ready.
All right, in the meantime, I'll check in with Owen, who's got some news from the opposite end of the pit lane. Owen, what have you had?
Yeah, I've just been moving from garage to garage, and it's very awkward at the TDS and Aston garages are right next to each other, and there's a desperate measures from both teams to get these cars finished. The TDS team have got the damaged right rear corner off, and they've got the new suspension on, just fitting a new drive shaft. and the Aston boys have got the new radiator in. I think if anything they're looking the closest to be ready to come out, but they're still a little bit of a way away yet.
Thanks, Owen. In has come the leader and had to come in around the 17 car of... Well, is that the 17 car that's in behind them? It's certainly another one of the prototypes. They had to get the dolly jacks out to get it straight before they could get the fuel hose on. And that just cost, what, 2 or 3 seconds for Earl Bamber as he came into the pit lane. But that has been an awesome turnaround. And that, in fact, must have been... Which car was that behind them? It wasn't the red Porsche.
I think it was Aston Martin, actually.
It's the garage next to the Porsches, isn't it? I think it's one of the Ferraris, but the number 62 Ferrari car, I think it was, that was all having a longer pit stop. But it did cost it time to the tune of 10 seconds, I would say, 62 seconds in the pits for Earl Bamber there for what should be a fuel-only stop. And so that's the longest stop from the Porsche. Now we can go back to Joe Bradley. He's got Roman Rusinov.